This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM, and as well as 88.3 FM in our new station up in Pontiac. So we're glad to be broadcasting to you from good old Central Illinois, and we're going to have a great show for you today. Go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. And you'll find out a lot more about us and all of the things that we do when we have meetings. And if you're interested in inquiring as to something that you can do or get involved with us, we'd be happy to hear from you. You can also call us. Our phone is 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. And if you'd like to make inquiries, and if you'd like to make a donation, we could sure appreciate that. We are expanding. We would like to get a station open in Lincoln as well. And all of this takes money, and of course, we're brought to you by you. So anything you can do to help us, we would very greatly appreciate. And again, we hope that everybody did have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and we're going to have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about a book that we mentioned last week that we would be talking about, and that's The Apocalypse, Warning, Hope, and Consolation by Michael D. O'Brien. And Mr. O'Brien is the author who wrote the Father Elijah series for some of you people who may have read those or be interested in those. And it is sort of interesting, that series itself. How did that come about? Lynn, do you want to mention that? The Father Elijah series, how he arrived at that?
Right. Michael O'Brien really didn't sit down with the idea, I'm going to write the Elijah series. He had an inspiration. And once he started writing, it just flowed out from this inspiration that he had. And he ended up writing, I think it's three books in that series.
Yeah, he said that, you know, I didn't realize that. As I mentioned before, I started reading Father Elijah, the first book, I guess it was. I'm not sure. I know you had it at home, Lynn, and you were reading
those books. Yeah, that was the first book.
Yeah, and at any rate, I had no idea that this was something that was inspirational. And he said that the whole thing came to him all at one time, I think he said.
Right.
And he felt that he was called or compelled, actually, to write the book. He didn't do it because he was looking for, you know, he had this idea and he wanted to write about it. It just came to him all at once. So it was an inspirational type thing. And all of his books have been fiction. And he has written this book that's out recently, The Apocalypse, Warning, Hope, and Consolation. And it's a very small book, but there is a lot packed into the book. And it's the first book that he's written that is nonfiction. And the reason...
Right. It is the first book. All the rest have been fiction.
Right. And he was asked, of course, we went over this a little bit last week, why he wrote it. And I think he has had the feeling that it is quite possible, I mean, you know, that we could be actually living in the sort of end times. We could be the generation, or maybe very close to it, in which the apocalypse actually takes place. And so he's writing about it. He's very cautious in his writings. He's not going and saying that this is going to happen soon or tomorrow or anything like that. But it is a very interesting book about why he thinks that this may be the case and how we should react and behave if this actually should be the case. And even, of course, you know, the knowledge as a Catholic that we have been living, you know, in the end times in a way ever since Christ left this earth. So we're going to go over some of those things. Is there anything that you want to add, Lynn, at all before we start?
Oh, he's the author of 28 books.
Wow, that's right. I think I did mention that. That's
right.
A lot of books.
That's a lot of books. And he's also an artist. And many of his paintings and portraits and so forth are in chapels and churches throughout the United States and in private collections around the world. Very talented man.
Yes, he is. And we're going to go ahead and start with this, The Apocalypse, Warning, Hope, and Consolation by Michael O'Brien. And again, the person that wrote the Father Elijah series. But before we start, I want to, you know, get a few things in, lay out a few things that we should always remember as Catholics, and it'll help, I think, as we go through this. But I'm going to ask the question, and I don't know, you know, if you'll be able to answer it or not. Lynn, maybe I don't think we did talk about it. But the question every Catholic should ask is, what is the sole ultimate purpose of the Church, of Christ's Church? You know, the Catholic Church is the Church that Christ started when he told, you know, Peter, "You are a rock, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell itself will not prevail against it." And this is, you know, what he told Peter. Peter means rock, and we've gone, you know, over this before. What is the sole ultimate purpose of the Church, Lynn?
To bring us to Christ, through Christ to God. And the purpose of the Church is to teach, guide, and nurture us so that we get there.
Exactly. The whole purpose, ultimate, of the Church is exactly that. It's to achieve salvation. The purpose of the Church is salvation. That's the reason for everything in the Church, from floor sweeping all the way to roof fixing, everything from wiping the windows to picking up trash, whatever, is aimed at one thing, and that's, I think, that we should always remember, because we do have a tendency in the modern day and age to get away from it, and Michael O'Brien touches on those things in the book he's written on the apocalypse, but that's the main reason for the Catholic Church. It's not a social organization. It's not it wasn't enshrined to enact social justice in the world. I mean, all of those things are fallouts from Christianity, from the idea of salvation. But those are not its main purpose. It's not to fix the environment. It's not to help and take care of the poor. All of those things are good, and they result from the Church itself. But the primary purpose, we should always remember, is for our salvation. And so it's a very specific. It is, we should always remember, that is, it is the institution that Christ founded that has the full and complete means of salvation. And anything that deviates from it or is not, you know, fully what it is not the whole and perfect means as the Church is for salvation. So we should keep that in mind, and every Catholic should remember that.
Right, and if you remember the Baltimore Catechism, those who have studied with that in mind, with that book, it's, we're here, God has created us to love, serve him in this world, so we'll be happy, and so we can attain heaven, be happy forever with God in heaven.
That's true. That's one of the, you know, the very first question. And the Baltimore Catechism is something very people should get, probably. If you don't get it anymore as a kid, of course, everybody back in our time did. The Church taught that because it asks these very simple questions, and it asks these very simple questions, and it may not be as expansive as the current catechism, but nevertheless, it does give a lot of the key things about the Church, and it does so very compactly and maybe an easier way to arrive at them. So I would recommend, if you don't have a Baltimore Catechism, get one and go through it.
Right. There is one issue that is made for the adult, for adults, and it gets extensive footnotes and so forth as to what actually the Catechism is, what it's for, and all the beliefs really expanded in that one.
At any rate, let's jump into his book, The Apocalypse, Warning, Hope, and Consolation. And we should always remember that when we're talking about Revelation, and of course he's talking about some of it here, what is the purpose of Christ's revelation to John? We all should remember that it always is that when we talk about Revelation, we're talking about Christ's revelation to John. And of course, through John, passed on to us. And the purpose of it is, you want to comment on that, Lynn?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Okay. I was going over his words, warning, hope of salvation. And the purpose of the revelation is Christ's warning for us to stay awake. And
right.
O'Brien really dwells on this fact in the first part of the book. We have been warned to stay awake, to watch. And, of course, the book of Revelation is also to give us hope. And how do we have that hope? And O'Brien reminds us by putting on the armor of God. And where do we get the armor of God? Of course, we get it through Christ's teaching as it was given to the church. And so by putting on all of those things that the Catholic Church incorporates, the dogmas and the sacraments and all the rest of it, we put on the armor of God. And that is where in lies our hope. Our hope lies there and not in things that we can do for ourselves.
You know, and this goes way back into the Old Testament. The Psalms very often will give you warnings about being awake and alert and watching what's going on around you. And there was Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And what did he say to his apostles, the disciples that were there with him? What did he say? He said, would you stay awake?
Would you watch with me for a while? Mm-hmm. Yeah, stay awake and watch with me for a while. And what did they do?
They went to sleep.
They fell asleep. And so, in effect, you know, he really is Father Elijah, but Michael O'Brien is very much emphasizing this idea in the very beginning of the book. It's important. And what is our consolation? Our consolation is, as John Paul II told us, be not afraid. Our consolation is in Jesus Christ. We are, you know, if we are living in the times of the apocalypse, stick with the church, be put on the armor of God, put on the consolation that be of good faith and of good cheer, and because be not afraid, because it is our salvation is in Jesus Christ. It's not in hiding from all of these things or building walls around, you know, that we can stay in or retreating from society or any of those things. And I think a good example of it, you and I were talking about it, Lynn. Who was it? I think it might have been Thomas Aquinas who said, he was asked, I think, one time, if, you know, the end time was today, what would you do? And I think Thomas Aquinas said, I would keep on doing whatever it was that I was doing. If I was working in my garden, I'd keep on working in my garden.
Yes.
And I would try to complete the task that I had assigned for myself.
Right.
So this is what we should be doing, according to Michael O'Brien, and also according to what we're taught as Catholics. And there was a book written by, I think it's a man by the name of McKay. I'm not sure it was Thomas McKay. And it was, worldly delusions and how people become sort of like delusional or mass hysteria all at once, and then they wake up one by one. And McKay wrote about various...
the tulips?
Yeah, various fads and crazes throughout the world from the time. One of them was the tulip craze in Holland, where people invested all their money in tulip bulbs. I mean, tulip bulbs sold for astronomical prices and so forth, until all of a sudden, you know, a lot of people who were promoting it began selling secretly and so forth. And then all of a sudden there was this huge collapse, and the whole Dutch economy was wrecked over this tulip craze. And it's an interesting thing to read. But this is how human beings behave. You know, we have these mass hysterias, and we can fall asleep very easily. We can be deluded into falling asleep and sort of a mass hypnosis, thinking everything is just fine, everything is going okay, and then all of a sudden things are upon us that we hadn't expected, and it's too late. So there's this emphasis by Jesus, there's emphasis in Scripture, and emphasis by the church, stay awake, watch.
Yes.
And
one of the Psalms speaks of the watchman at night, and how he is paid, of course, but he watches and watches all night long, and how he yearns for the daylight. Well, he's yearning for heaven, for, you know, the peace, the light.
Exactly. And that's what we get in the theme in the beginning of the book is awake, awake, awake. And a theme of the book is a return to orthodoxy, too. In other words, tradition and dogma. In other words, keep what was given to us and hand it on, you know, as handed on by Jesus Christ to the apostles and as handed on by the apostles to the church. And the call is for us to stop the panaceas, stop these ideas that faith alone will save us or that some kind of something will save us that we can do material or ourselves or our society will save us or you know, we are going to find a way, a plan or something to rebuild the world and remake it so that society is so much better, and all the various groups that have all these ideas and plans. Scrap those, and O'Brien is saying, stick with the orthodoxy that the church has given us, and put your faith in Jesus Christ, put on the armor of God, be watchful and aware, don't be overly gullible and falling for all kinds of schemes and things about the apocalypse. Don't let it frighten you out of your wits and make you do things that are foolish, and at the same time, don't be skeptical either. There are a number of ways that you can actually not be awake, and that is to disbelieve entirely or to let things overwhelm you. And that's the main theme of the first part of the book. Do you want to comment any further on that, Lynn?
Well, who was it that said they go, people go into this like hypnosis or whatever, and all the confusion, like with the tulips? But when they come back to realization, what is real, they don't do it as a group. They do it one by one.
I think that was Thomas McKay, the author. I think I'm trying to think of the complete title of the book. It was like Worldly Delusions and Worldly Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, I think, by Thomas McKay.
There you got it.
And he said that people will become delusional all at once. In other words, you get that crowd mentality where everybody will run down the same path and do all kinds of foolish things, and then they wake up one by one. In other words, people come to their senses one by one. So,
right.
And that's what the whole book is. Are we awake? Are we reading the signs of the times? And that's what Christ warned about, too. He said to the Pharisees, I think he said, you and some of the people, he said, you can read the signs of the weather, he said, but you can't read the signs of the times. And so he's asking us to do this. And we also have to remember, we can't save ourselves. We have to give ourselves to God through Christ. And to do that is to become docile. That is docile meaning open-minded and willing to listen. We also have to understand that if we do go through suffering, and of course, when you read about in Revelation, we will, and we are right now, but suffering is meaningful, and that's one of the huge contributions that the Catholic Church has to its faithful, is to teach them that their suffering itself can be given up to God. It's meaningful, and God can take it and make good come out of it, which we can't do ourselves. So at that point, I just want to stop here. And we'll go on from here, but that's what the book stresses, and we should remember, is that the very simple thing is stay awake, keep watch, keep your senses, don't be deluded by fear, and don't be deluded simply by turning away either. There's a middle path, and that is to put on the armor of Christ through the church that Christ established, which is the Catholic Church. So we'll stop there. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
When your hands are full and you can't reach the radio dial, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you're relaxing after a busy day and need inspiration, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you can't remember the radio station's frequencies, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
It's easy to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5 or 92.5 FM. And now you can listen on Alexa. Just say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Spirit Radio from TuneIn.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. And we're talking about the book out that just recently came out by Michael D. O'Brien, The Apocalypse, Warning, Hope, and Consolation. And I don't think that at the beginning of the show I gave you where you can get the book. I tried to get it at the Dwelling Place, and maybe Bob has it over there now. I'm not sure. I didn't check today. But I got it through Amazon, and you can get it that way. It's put out by a publishing company, Wise Blood. All of the rest of O'Brien's books were put out through Ignatius Press, and this is put out through Wise Blood Press, which is a different press.
And, it's fairly new, too.
Right. There's a good story about Wise Blood itself, but we can't get into that right now. And it's a fairly new, as Lynn said, publishing company. So maybe that's why some people are having a hard time getting it, because of a different publishing company and Hopefully the dwelling place will be able to get that. But if you want to read the book, you can get it through Amazon. If you read some of the Catholic newspapers like Catholic Register and so forth, it's advertised in there, and you'll find out more about it there. So I'm sure it will become more prominent as time goes by. So it's right now it just came out and it's brand new. But at any rate, the next step that Michael O'Brien says is that the church must pass through a final trial that will shake the faith of believers. And the question is this the final trial? Now, the church, of course, has been through a lot of trials before. I mean, if we look back in the past, there are things happening in the church today, some of the scandals that are so sad and so shameful. But this kind of thing has happened before, so it doesn't necessarily signal that we are in some kind of the nearer the end times. But the point that O'Brien makes is that what is going on today, the divisions in society, the divisions in the church, and this flip-flopping of values, taking things at one time that were considered good, such as preventing abortion and other things, and making those things almost seem evil now, in other words, making the good evil and the evil good. These kind of things have been happening over quite a long period of time, and in a way that hasn't really happened before, and in a way that's more insidious maybe than what things have happened before. And so because of that, it is possible that our generation could be actually living in the end times in the sense that nearer the apocalypse than we were before. Or maybe, people coming after us very shortly. So that's what he's warning. He's not making any predictions. He's not saying, I know, what the apocalypse is and what it's going to be and what it'll look like, any of those things that many other people do. But he's saying if you take all this together, and that's what we're talking about, and he's saying that, again, there were scandals before, but now the church is sorely divided. We had the divisions, of course, that happened because of the Reformation, and so we have a lot of different people and groups calling themselves, Christianity or Christian. We have a lot more internal divisions today, maybe within a church itself, people divided on. And even it seems to be that there's some shakiness and division over dogma. And we have what we call this modern heresy, which Hilaire Belloc identified back at the turn of the 20th century as a heresy that seems to encompass all heresies and very hard to put our fingers on because it never actually seems to be what it really is. It always seems to be something else, just like today when we have people coming out and saying that, being in favor of abortion, that is being in favor of pro-choice as an act of compassion and love rather than what it was called before, an act of evil, intrinsically wrong. And so we're getting a lot of this more. So
yes, they're making the bad look good and the good look bad.
Yeah, all is material. We have this idea that came out of the 18th century that everything is material in the world and that if there's a God, he's sort of divided away from the material world. There's God on the one hand, the material world on the other. God's up in his heaven. Material world is here. Our concern is with the material world. God's world is spiritual and have no concern with this world. We've had that going on for quite a while. We have this idea that man is all, that we can create this being on the right side of history and save our, rebuild the whole world into this better and more improved world that we can save ourselves. Again, as Lynn said, good is evil and evil is good. Material panacea delusions worldwide, again, that, there's all these different plans and so forth that we can redo the world, stop global warming and take charge of nature and do all the recreate man genetically and so forth. All of this has been going on, and it's been going on for a long time. And we're warned in Revelation, and we're warned all throughout Scripture, we're warned by Jesus to avoid Messianism. In other words, this idea, the secular Messianism, that we can be our own Messiah, so to speak, that man can save the world, that man is the summon of all things. Were you commenting more on that, Lynn? You want to say anything on that?
No, I mean, you can see it happening all around you, and you just have to watch and see what's going on. It's really so important to keep an eye on what's going on around you. You know, it's gone through that we truly are in a culture of death on one hand. New life is barely welcomed. They'd rather clone people and so forth in test tubes than to welcome a new life in this world. And we're spreading this. This is being spread throughout the world. Africa, China, Japan, you know, you name it. It's there. The Netherlands, you know, just go on and on and on.
Behind this, you know, there is this idea that we can remake man, you know, through our own efforts. An improved version, and that is you know, very, very dangerous. But what does Revelation say about the mysterious culmination of history, this idea that we can somehow or another achieve almost utopia within history, or achieve salvation within history, where man can be the engineer of his own salvation in history? It strictly rejects that and says that history, you know, is an eschatological thing. In other words, there are end times, and it is only after those end times that true, you know, the salvation of the entire world and so forth will take place. It is not within history that it is going to actually happen, you know, completely. And so this idea of being on the right side of history and rebuilding the world, if you read Revelation and Scripture and what Christ taught, is doomed to failure. And this idea that we can somehow or another decide what the right way to go and the right forces of history are, and we just get on those forces, it's almost a re-establishment of Marxism. Wasn't it Marx that said, you know, everything is a product of history, and ultimately Marxism and communism will be the end product of history? It'll be the final culmination of history itself. All historical forces will establish a final paradigm such as communism, and then we'll all live in effect happily ever after within that paradigm.
Isn't that a fairy tale now?
Yes, it's a pipe dream and it's a fairy tale, but people keep on redoing it over and over, and each time they do it in a different way, they always look back at the other and say, oh, that was all entirely wrong. But the paradigm we have is based on the facts, or it's based on a new knowledge, or it's based on more commonsensical thinking, or it's based on economics as we know it, and so forth.
Yeah.
But speaking of economics, I can remember, it hasn't been that long ago to me anyhow, when I was in college, that there were all kinds of economists and people studying economists then saying that we can fine-tune the economy. Well, I've seen a lot.
They've been doing that quite frequently.
So if we could fine-tune it, then some of the fine-tuners must have been sleeping at the fine-tuning switches a number of times during my lifetime. That's for sure. So I didn't see them doing the fine-tuning when we had some of the worst economic ups and downs that we've ever had. So, but so anyhow, again, O'Brien says, whether this is the final battle or not, we must all face the beast. And when we talk about the beast, of course, that's Satan, and triumph over the Spiritus Mundi. And when he's talking here in his book about the Spiritus Mundi, it's the spirit of the world, that is, the material world, the secular world. You might call it public opinion, whatever you want to call it. It's that zeitgeist of the world, the worldly spirit. And the idea of triumphing over that, you know, in other words, defeating the world, and this is what we're talking about, overcoming the world. Christ says, I will overcome the world. You know, the world will not overcome you if you, you know, believe in me and follow me, because I will overcome the world. He says, I have already overcome the world. So our battle really is won and in the long run, but we will have to nevertheless face the trials and so forth in the meantime. And all of us have to face the beast regardless of whether this is the final time or not, and that's what O'Brien wants to make clear. And doing that, whether it's in the final time or not in the final time, will not come through our own power. And again, the next thing he stresses so much is we have to become like little children again. And didn't Christ stress that, Lynn?
Oh, he did. Unless you become like little children, you shall not enter the kingdom.
And he goes on to talk about the world itself and how much, you know, its influence on us and how we chase after it, especially in our modern technological times with all of the the ability to, you know, immerse ourselves in technology and the computers and so forth. And he brings up the story of Lot and his wife, you know, and he says, you know, Lot and his wife were told to turn away. And we also, he brings up the saying of Jesus Christ that whoever tries to preserve his life will lose it, and whoever is willing to lose it will keep it. And what happens to Lot's wife, Lynn?
She turned into a pillar of salt.
And why was this? What happened?
Because she turned and looked back. She, I, you know, you get the feeling. She looked back, but thinking, "What, you know, what I'm leaving? I'm leaving security, and this false security she thought she had."
Exactly, exactly. In other words, Christ is telling us to turn away from worldly things and follow Him. And this is a great example here that the Scripture gives. Lot's wife, and you know, was told to turn away, and so was Lot. Turn away and don't look back. But what are they doing? They're leaving everything that they have ever known. And so you can see there would be a huge temptation to turn around and look back. So exactly as you said, she's looking back at what was her security. And don't we always do that, saying, well, you know, things can't really be as bad as they seem. And, I mean, after all, the sun comes up every morning, and we still have food and shelter, and there's entertainment, and I'm used to this, and I like it here. And, you know, I don't really want things to change. And I think that's exactly the example of Lot's wife. She looked
right
back.
And you look at in Exodus, when the people were brought out of slavery, what did they immediately start complaining about? How could you lead us out here in the desert to die?
Exactly. They were looking back at the only world that they ever knew. And that's another thing he's setting up here, is that we are so used to our world, the things in our world, no matter how topsy-turvy, and they're coming faster and faster, it seems, the changes, but nevertheless, it's still our world, and the world that we live in, it's familiar to us. And so we think of it as being the norm. And that's what he's pointing out. In other words, Christ, that's why Christ is saying, in order to gain your life, you have to be willing to lose it. And by life, he means not just your life in the sense of, you know, that thing that belongs to your physical body, but the whole thing you're attached to all around you, the world. He says, our era is of the spirit of Antichristus. By abandoning God, we try to become God because man is by nature religious. And isn't that the case? I mean,
indeed it is. We all want, people nowadays want to be their own God, control everything. But you can't.
Exactly. And that's, and when you abandon God, that's how you feel, that you're going to take charge and you're going to shape things, and we're going to build.
Do it my way, and it will be better.
Look at how political we've become. I mean, at one time, you know, I can remember back when politics was not the be-all and end-all of everything, and it seems anymore it is becoming the be-all and end-all. Like somehow or another, if we just get the right people in charge and we just get the right politics, everything will turn out okay. We have the whole liberal paradigm, this idea that liberalism could incorporate everything, that all people could live within liberalism, that liberal, you know, as long as there is, you know, tolerance and that kind of thing became the greatest virtue and so forth. And a lot of it is crashing down all around our heads, and it's not working, but we are so attached to it that we keep thinking, well, it's just because there's people who are gumming up the works, and if we can get rid of them or readjust this or do that, somehow or another we'll get it all in shape and get it fixed and everything's going to be okay.
Well, that's another fairy tale, I guess.
And again, today we have such a great reversal of values. And why do so many refuse to see the great reversal of values? That is, you know, the fact that we have abortion now in this country, and as Christians and the church itself, safely, I never thought that something like this would happen. It was very clear that abortion was wrong. It was illegal, for one thing, in our society and in Christian societies. And now it's looked upon as being compassionate because, you know, we're looking at half-truths and not seeing whole truths. And
you must look at it and include, you know, just see it all for what it is. And it's hard to do at first, but you have to do that. Just look at it and see what it truly is. Right. And it's evil.
So
abortion.
But why do so many refuse to see the great reversal of values that we have? I mean, it's not that difficult to see. that evil has become good and good evil, because without God, man's only escape is to either deny that this is the case. He can do that. Deny that that's the case, that that this evil is really happening, or become so terrified of it that he can't act at all. So this is what people have a tendency to do. They normalize it. In other words, from a disaster of such magnitude, if you really feel, and I think a lot of people do, that there's something wrong. Deep down, a lot of people feel there's something wrong today. Something's coming. And I think maybe that's why O'Brien has written this, that something is coming, that something is wrong. And in order to shake that feeling and not believe in it, a lot of people, instead of following Christ's advice and put yourselves in the hands of God, we normalize it. We say, well, come on, I mean, everybody's, you know, I go down to the store, they're buying and selling, and economy's going on, and we're eating and sleeping and having entertainment, and we have houses, and, you know, we have politics, and we have government, and we're managing things. Things are going to be okay again.
Well, sure, we have control of them, and why wouldn't they be?
We escape into familiarity, and the more we familiarize things, the more and more we don't see them in real depth. They just become so blasé and taken for granted that it seems okay. And so we can end up doing things that are horribly evil and never even notice it.
Right. It's that misplaced compassion.
Exactly.
It's going to make things better for you.
So we'll build a new world, and we'll have a new world order, and the fact is that when we do that, we end up destroying the one that we have, and destroying the old, and thinking the new is going to be much better and replace it. And no longer are we following God; we're following our own, probably acting on fear and not even realizing it, by papering over everything that is actually wrong. So you know, we become blasé. We say, "Well, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs." At any rate, I'm going to stop there. We'll take a break. And we'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Can you hear me now? Catholic Spirit Radio has wonderful news to share. Our radio broadcasts now reach all the way to the Pontiac area. This means more listeners in and around Pontiac, Flanagan, Lexington, and Chenoa can hear the identical EWTN and local programs that are being aired in Bloomington Normal. Our northern listeners can hear Catholic Spirit Radio on 88.3 FM. Catholic Spirit Radio is here to share the beauty and truth of our Catholic faith. Tell your friends to tune in at 89.5 or 92.5 FM, and now also on 88.3 FM if you live or travel northeast of Normal. Can you hear me now? Of course, anyone can hear Catholic Spirit Radio 24 hours a day on your radio, on your phone, with our free app, through Alexa, or on our website at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM, 92.5 FM, and our new station, 88.3 FM, up in Pontiac. And we're back from our break. We're talking about Michael O'Brien's book, The Apocalypse, and I hope you're enjoying it. It's a very interesting book, a small book, easy to read, but there is so much packed into it. I mean, every paragraph is packed with much more than it seems like it is. At any rate, we've been talking about how people normalize things, and this is one of the big points that Michael O'Brien is making. He suspects we may actually be living in the end times, you know, the very, very near the apocalypse itself, or the end, because this has been coming on for such a long time, and we are divided up greatly, that we have flip-flopped the values, and Paul says that he predicts that people will call evil good and good evil, and we have now with us abortion, homosexuality, transgender, pornography, just to mention a few, and all of those things we are insisting are okay, normal, and even good and compassionate.
And the breakdown of the family goes right along with that.
Exactly.
And that's being accepted.
Exactly. In other words, when we reject fatherhood and motherhood, when we say that it really doesn't mean anything, that you know, any gender can be fathers or mothers or whatever the case might be.
Well, my gosh, the state could come in and raise these kids better.
Same-sex marriage and all of that kind of thing is a breakdown of the family. And O'Brien is suggesting here, at least, if not saying directly, that this comes from a denial of God as our Father, and maybe also a denial of the church as our mother, and the representation, of the church, Mary, the motherhood of Mary, and the whole motherhood of Jesus, and Mary and Joseph, the family. And if we reject the very thing that gave us our civilization, Christianity, and that whole model, then eventually the things that we have in our civilization begin to fade away too, and so the family is being broken down. So that's a very good point, Lynn, that he brings up. So that's an important he brings up. And again, he stresses here that the apocalypse that is coming on us, it will appear normal. You know, you read Revelation, and you see all these monsters and all these things, and wow, I mean, if this is going to happen, I'll see it coming a mile away. And Jesus says it will happen suddenly. But
they'll be eating and drinking and marrying and so forth on as if everything's fine, and then it will come.
And exactly. So how does that fit in? How can something happen suddenly? Because it certainly seems there. At the same time, how can it happen that O'Brien is saying here, we've been moving into this for a long time. We can look back and see historically we've been moving into it for a long time, and that we won't see it coming. And, all these flip-flops have happened, and we don't really notice them, because he compares it to a tsunami. And this is an important thing in the book. He compares the apocalypse to a tsunami. And if you have a tsunami, you know, what happens is way out in the ocean somewhere, usually the seafloor collapses. A huge portion of the seafloor, because of volcanic activity, collapses, and that causes a wave, you know, because all of the water drops. And then, you know, that's what a wave is. It's an up-and-down motion of the water. And let's suppose that it's a huge collapse and things drop 50, 60, 100, 200 feet, and the water drops like that. If you're out there in the ocean, you'll notice hardly anything at all. There'll be a little blip. And when a wave starts out there, it'll just be a little blip on the surface. If you're out there in a boat, you could probably be out there even a very small boat. And you'll bounce over it. It won't seem too much. But as that wave gains speed and moves toward shore, and the water starts to get shallower and shallower and shallower, it keeps its height. If it dropped 200 feet, you know, when that ocean floor dropped, when that wave hits that shallow water, it's going to start riding up 200 feet higher than that than the shallows are. And as it hits the beaches and comes into the land, it's moving at great speed by that time. I think 400 or 500 miles an hour, if not faster than that. I mean, it is really moving. And all of a sudden, there it is. And you are overwhelmed by it. And yet it took place way out in the ocean and was happening for a long time before you ever see it. And I think that what O'Brien is stressing here is because something like the apocalypse happens at first over such a long period of time, we normalize everything. We blind ourselves to what's going on. We take things for granted. If we get a little bit worried and scared, we dive right back into that normality and start reassuring ourselves that everything is okay. It may be that some people go the opposite direction. They take everything too literally and take everything to be going to happen too quickly, and then they become frightened and overreact. Either way, we become blind to what's really going on. And so that's in the book as well. So he's saying that could be a sign. But all of a sudden, it can break on us just like that wave. So
right. When I think of the tsunami, in relationship to the topic here, you're watching as things build up over time. They go out. They also take things down when it begins to form, and whoosh! All of a sudden, it's upon you, and you don't realize it. Everything that came before it, all these things that have deteriorated in our culture, have built up to the point where it's going to collapse.
And O'Brien goes on to say, he says, people of every generation have experienced an imperfect world. However, a generation is actually going to go through the final stage of the apocalypse. You know, that tsunami is going to break. Yet to them, before it does, it will appear normal. In fact, it will even appear good. In other words, evil will appear as good, and good will conversely appear as evil. When he's asking now in the book, he's saying, are we them? Are we that generation that is right at that point where the wave actually breaks and reveals itself to be what it really is? You know, have we been blinded to it because of all the little incremental changes that we have had over the last couple hundred years? And that's where most of these changes have been going on, if you really trace things back.
Yes,
back
it's
to
been
about
a slow buildup.
Right. And now that buildup is going faster and faster. So he's asking, he's saying, if so, if we are, and he's not saying we are, he's saying that if there's anything to show that we are that generation, it's this long, slow buildup with the possibility of a sudden tsunami, you know, appearing seemingly out of nowhere. But, of course, you know, it was actually out there all the time, out there in the middle of the ocean all the time. And he's saying, we will be enslaved, as you were mentioning, Lynn, by giving up our responsibilities to the state. He thinks that's how our generation, you know, will be enslaved. To a class of knowers, to the experts who will protect us, and most of these people are materialists. That somehow or another, the material world is all we can do with. Religion is something that deals with the, you know, the spiritual world.
Yes.
That's far, far away over the horizon. Mm-hmm. There's nothing for us to worry about.
It has its own box,
exactly,
sort of, to speak to, exist in. And it doesn't have to be brought into the common stream.
And he's saying that this is happening, and I think you could look around and see how much the state really, in all of Western civilization especially, anymore, has encroached upon us and run so many things. And he's saying, you know, what stands in its way? What stands in the way of this onslaught of the state? And he says, only the Roman Catholic Church, Christ Church. And that's how Western civilization was built. It was built because there was a huge tension between the state and the church. And I've said before, there was never a separation of church and state like there supposedly is now. There was a distinction between the church and state. But it was always recognized by the state that the church had its role to play in its sphere of influence, and that the state had its sphere of influence. But both the church and the state were beholden to God. In other words, both the church and the state were under God's law. That's what we recognized before. You know, when it was said, you know, when Christ responded, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and God's what is God's, he didn't mean that Caesar was exempt from that. Caesar had to render what was God's too. And so that's how it was when Western civilization was built, you know, more or less. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but that was the model. And we no longer have that model. And so there is no longer a church there to protect us from the state. The church has been divided up into, you know, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of different groups, all proclaiming, you know, that they have the answers. So he's saying now the West is in greatest danger, even more danger than some of the evils that came before. In Eastern Europe, for example, in all prior to our present day, for example, the beast was a form of hard tyranny. The beast was easy to recognize. The beast took the shape of cruel and mean rulers. But nevertheless, the beast was unmasked and known for what it is. But now in the West, O'Brien is saying, it appears as soft and not what it is, not what it is. And it's all around and among us. And we have accepted it because we have now seen all kinds of things that we formerly called evil as being good. And we see many things before that we called good being called evil. So things are being flip-flopped. And so we have been blinded to what the beast is. And it won't be oppressing us in the same manner that it's more amenable to us. But again, think of that tsunami. When the beast suddenly reveals itself to be what it is, it will be far bigger, more fierce, and stronger than it ever was before, just like that tsunami coming in the shore. It doesn't seem much of anything at all until all of a sudden you're standing on a beach and it's roaring at you. It rises up out of the water as by magic.
And it goes faster and faster.
As it rides up that shore.
Tsunami does.
Exactly.
Closer. Seems,
right.
You know.
Now the beast acts in the name of tolerance. It appears in the name of mercy. It appears in the name of justice. It appears in the name of compassion. Don't we hear that all the time?
Oh, constantly.
And in other words, we can't see it because it proclaims that it is, you know, compassionate, that it is mercy. But O'Brien is pointing out that justice and compassion and mercy and so forth without truth never turn out to be what they seem to be. If we separate them from the truth, then they don't turn out to be what they seem to be. But that's isn't that what's going on?
If yes, you point it's a out, great deception.
If you point out the truth of tolerance or the truth of that tolerance is abortion, for example, if you point out the truth of it, that it is killing another innocent human being, then you are called intolerant.
That's right.
And this is what he goes on. He said there's been a flip-flop. He says society now believes in the beast. It believes in the prince of the world. It believes in the fathers of lies, that all are okay and all are saved.
In today's world, you cannot believe in making your own judgments or, you know, prejudice. Don't be prejudiced and blah, blah, blah. You have to be discriminating between right and wrong.
This is exactly, you know, what is going on. In other words, everything has been turned around, and now O'Brien is saying there's a new Phariseeism. And that, too, has been flip-flopped. In other words, if you are someone who is compassionate and merciful and good based on telling the whole truth and not a partial truth, that is, if you point out, for example, that abortion is evil because it may relieve some suffering on the part of one person to some extent in a certain direction, but on the other hand, it incorporates the actual killing of another innocent human being, then you are called intolerant and you are called uncompassionate. So compassion then has been divorced from the truth. But if somebody omits that truth and says that they are a new rebel acting on behalf of woman, on behalf of compassion and so forth, even though they are advocating something that is cruel and evil, the killing of an innocent person, they are the ones now that are called compassionate. So you see what I mean? In other words, if you stick to what used to be and express the whole truth, you are some kind of a dour, stern Pharisee who has no compassion or love for people. But on the other hand, if you advocate doing something that would kill an innocent human being, you are now called compassionate and loving and a rebel, you know, for a new compassion or a rebel for a new cause or a rebel for the liberal cause. So that has been flip-flopped and turned around too.
Yes, it is. And you got to be aware of these things. Look for them. Look around you. And when things seem to be one thing, look and see if they really are that way.
And O'Brien compares this to the tale of Satan. If we look at Revelation and we see, you know, that there is a great sign appeared in the sky, and it talks about the woman, you know, who is giving birth to a child who will rule the world with an iron rod and so forth, and the devil, you know, comes after that and tries to devour her, and it sweeps with its tail the stars down out of the sky, sweeping, you know, light and so forth out of the sky. He is saying that, you know, this is a great sign that in effect is, you know, the devil's tail interfering into human affairs. And didn't Paul VI say, you know, back before Vatican II, that the smoke of Satan has entered the church?
That's
the
right.
Tail of Satan. I think he used the term, the tail of Satan has entered the church.
Yep.
Talked about the tail of Satan entering the church. And you get this in Revelation with the woman, you know, in the sky who appears, and Satan after and so forth, that this is that great sign. And all of the things O'Brien is saying that are working together today, these little tiny things, not these great big things that, you know, we find in some of the fundamentalist preaching or other even, you know, extremist Catholics preaching on end times and so forth, that all these great events will take place and so forth. No, he's saying that all of these little things are taking place until a society is so changed that it doesn't see the beast, which rises up in effect like a tsunami right out of the ocean and is all of a sudden upon us before we know what happens. So he's saying for all these reasons, and there's much, much more in the book. I don't want to give you all of what's in there because you need to read it for yourself. But he makes a great case that because of these things and to watch, we could be living in the end times.
Yes, in the 164 pages is what this book is. He packs so much into it. And it really isn't a hard read, and, you know, it's double space and so forth, but the ideas and the thoughts, it's worth the effort to read it.
Yeah, and if you take all of the other things that are in there that sometimes people take literally, like the thousand-year reign, and a lot of these things, he said, they're there, and they will happen, but they aren't necessarily literal. In other words,
it's not our time.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
It's God's time.
Right. God's time is different than our time, and that in God's time, one day is equal to 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is equal to a day, and so forth. So all of those things are there, but the fact is, as Christ said in the very beginning of his ministry, is that when he was telling the Pharisees, you can read the signs of the weather, but you can't read the signs of the times. That's because the signs of the times are often so normalized by us that we take them for granted, and we really don't see what we ought to be seeing. And this book calls your attention to that and puts all of these things together, gives a lot more of information than we could possibly give here. So I do suggest that you get it if you can and read it, and it will make, I think, the apocalypse far more real than some of the really frightening tales of the apocalypse, and more frightening and insidious in a different way. But he also gives us the antidote to it, and that is to become like little children again and to take Jesus Christ as our Savior, put on the armor of God, which is the armor that the church has given us, and get out of our heads this idea that we can, you know, just chase after Jesus Christ as some kind of a pal to sit next to us in the front seat of the car and be our buddy as we ride along. He's saying, put back the armor of the church, because that's what Christ established, just like Paul said to Timothy. He said, you know how to behave when I'm not around, and that is within the church, which is the pillar and foundation of the truth. And that's what we as Catholics and some of the people who have fallen away need to do, is to come back to that. So we're going to have to stop here. We're at the end of our program. St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen. God bless everybody out there, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.